The Last Supper. The place had a hellish appearance on a night like this. My heart was quickened both by the phantasmal landscape and by the prospect of the awesomely significant and darkly appropriate deed which lay ahead. This was one of those ancient and obscure New England graveyards of which no aesthetically sensitive ghoul could fail to be fond. Lying as it did on a rutted and little-traveled road with a weed-banked and somber-looking river flowing sluggishly behind the backmost stone fence, and with nothing on either side save untenanted and dreary stretches of rocky terrain, the graveyard itself was a ghoul's delight, extending a considerable distance back from the gate by the road, where there stood a rickety wooden shack used by the night watchman, extending a considerable distance back over undulations of sparsely grass-covered ground spotted at close intervals by tombstones, which were at first the markers of relatively recent interments, but which became, as one progressed toward the back, older and more ill-preserved until, in a dark corner furthest removed from the road, the stones became those black slate relics which marked, with their archaic inscriptions and ponderous carvings, the slumbering places of the town's early settlers. This most ancient corner was, to me, aesthetically, artistically, the most pleasing, especially with a hazy sky above, a sky in which a yellow moon festered in sickly diffusion of pale light above the mound-hovering willows, and especially with a quaintly soughing wind which stirred the trees into slight but charming animation. But quite apart from such aesthetic considerations, I must confess that the newer portions of this quaint necropolis were of more direct and practical meaning to me, because in the immemorial backmost graves, whose slate markers bore inscriptions belonging to the 18th century, there was now nothing of which a questing ghoul could make a morsel. The nearer and more recent graves had indeed known defilement, not only by myself, but by a number of my companions of kindred appetite. It was because of the untimely death of one of those nocturnal practitioners of profanation, in fact, that my surviving friends and I had come here on this special night, had come for uncommon feastings. Ghouls we all were, and with such an unholy kinship of sympathetic understanding that we had never even discussed the particular night on which we must gather in solemn conclave. We had simply known and had come. We were unseen, but we were present. The only visible motion in all this gloomy scene was the bobbing of the light as the venerable night watchman made his rounds, shuffling phlegmatically along the paths among the graves, and taking copious pulls at the bottle, which he kept, we well knew, close at hand. We watched him in morbid and quiet amusement. From our various shadowed hiding places, here behind a large gnarled oak, there behind an especially broad slab, there again in the shadow of a mound, everywhere concealment was offered. We watched the perambulating figure, watched even as he stepped past the very grave whose compelling interest had drawn us together. This was the grave of Rowley Ames, whom we had all known and revered over many years of forbidden pleasure-taking. Rowley Ames, whose profound and virtuosic command of the art of ghoulery, my companions and I could only regard with consummate respect and, in fact, genuine awe. He had been the master, and a young person of necrophagous inclination could do no better than to study at the side of this inspiring and inspired nocturnal lurker, observing and imitating him as he deliberated upon the time and the place of his conquest, exhumed some carefully chosen subject from the charnel earth, and spent the next hour immersed in unhallowed rending and gnawing as only a truly gifted artist could do. I had learned much from him myself, and I was here tonight, as were my companions, to pay grateful last respects, not the insipid last respects of his idiotically conventional funeral weeks before, but the one single special tribute that we could best lavish upon him. We had all understood from the outset, naturally, that the unique tribute to be paid to Rowley Ames must consist of our gathering at his grave for one wholly remarkable feast, the eating of his own long, monstrously nourished carcass. Of course, it would be a symbolic act. There were fully 12 of us. The remainder of a corpse-devouring coven minus its erstwhile leader, and for each of us, his body, especially wasted as it was by his final illness, would provide only a token ingestion, but it would be enough, and it would be, we felt, the way he would have wanted to be remembered. We had waited, by common tacit understanding, several weeks for a proper putrescence, and now it was time. I watched with some impatience from my point of concealment, as I knew the others were watching, while the shuffling watchman completed his rounds and returned to the decrepit shack by the front gate. Before long, he had collapsed into the usual alcoholic stupor, and we emerged from the shadows to get on with our affair. Under a pallid moon, we gathered at the grave of Rowley Ames and exchanged silent but knowing glances. The grave was situated not in the backmost and most archaic corner, which had so appealed to his sense of aesthetic charm, but rather in the newer section amidst actual former recipients of his nocturnal attentions. Indeed, it was ironic that the two graves flanking his own were graves which, as it happened, his hands and teeth had once defiled. And now it was his turn. We had come to pay him the ultimate tribute. Words can hardly convey the eagerness, the titillation, the sense of reverential awe with which we delved into the foul earth, turning an occasional furtive eye over the shoulder to ascertain that we were unobserved, or indulging in an occasional appreciative glance at the wan, moonlit sky forming, with the phantasmal willows overhanging mossy stones, so ghastly a setting for our anticipated deed. We fairly drooled in that anticipation, our mouths working and moving as if already busy at delectable subterraneous pleasures. As we worked feverishly to uncover his coffin, my own uppermost thought was sometimes my respect for my old master, and sometimes simply the gustatory ecstasy that was to come with the devouring of one who had himself fed upon countless upheaved boxes of carrion delight. And in the midst of such musings, I felt my hand reach a hard surface through the clammy soil and knew that the feast was to commence forthwith. Wheezing and panting with the exertion, we lifted the coffin up onto level ground and gathered around it in a circle of anxious faces. There in that charnel scene of sickly moon, morbid landscape, and sighing night wind, we were gathered, his faithful students in unspeakable arts, ready to behold his miasmal remains, to admire, to partake. We mouthed certain blasphemous litanies appropriate to the ceremoniousness of the occasion and pried open the casket. It took a few seconds to understand what we were seeing. By what unthinkable process, I do not know, but by some inconceivable organic process, he lived. Or Rowley Ames was animate, stirring, though flaggingly, as if he were now dying anew. But it was not this fact itself that sent us precipitately scattering in revulsion and dismay, not the mere fact of his odd reanimation and the sardonic hollow laugh with which he greeted us as the coffin lid was raised. We might have been glad, on the contrary, to experience such unanticipated, unimaginable reunion with our master. Our reaction certainly would not normally have been to disperse headlong into the night and leave that scene at the gravesite, which a reporter described with so much disgust for the newspaper the following day. No. What seemed insupportable to us, rather, was the fact that the ghoul Rowley Ames lay there in his coffin with a hideously bloated belly, but with most of the rest of the sinewy, wormy mass of his body loathsomely gnawed away. The wretch had waited, too, though not quite so long as we, and writhing into queer vivification in his coffin, had eaten his own putrid flesh.